Well, good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. Thanks so much for being part of it on the other end of the radio waves and also on the other end of the telephone line. If you want to weigh in with a comment or a question or a concern, that local number, 414-1234 in the greater capital city area. If it is long distance from you to us, it's 800-926-8809. And Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. Also, we have a Twitter account, which is at WFSU. SU Perspective, if that is your preferred form of communication. I'm Tom Flanagan, and the death of a loved one, which I would say probably all of us have gone through, that is probably one of the, if not the most common cause of profound grief, but there are lots of other sources as well. It could be the loss of a career or a job. Many of us have gone through that, right? It can be even something that is just very near and dear to you in the form of a possession, maybe a family heirloom. Anything can trigger this kind of an emotional meltdown. Many times we can get over it with time, which will be the healing force, and a little bit of depth perspective can bring some healing and resolution to all this. But there are also times when you just can't pull out of it. And we are so lucky in this area because we have some fantastic resources, some professional help that's available to folks right here that can turn that situation around and kind of give us a new lease on life, to use the old saw. So we welcome some folks from Lee's Place, which has been around here since the year 2000 in Tallahassee, over by Lake Ella. Kind of kitty corner from the Post 13 American Legion, if you know where that is. We're going to be talking today to the founder, executive director, and adult therapist of Lee's Place, which is Dr. Brenda Robles. Good to have you on, Brenda.
Thank you. Thank you.
Also, Karen Lockard, who is an LCSW, licensed clinical social worker.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
Okay. You work with children, teens, and young adults as a therapist.
I do. Probably about half of my client load is our children, and the other half are the young adults. Those are my favorite populations right now.
Oh, great. Can't wait to talk to you about that, Karen. Stacy Stoddard joins us, too. She's an LMFT, which is Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist.
That is right. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we're – children, teen, and young adults also is kind of your bailiwick, right, Stacy?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. Well, can't wait to speak with you about that. And the person I really need to give a personal shout-out to here, even though she's right across the table from me, is Beth Teddio. She's Director of Development and got everything kind of started as far as organizing this back – gosh, it was around Christmas, wasn't it, Beth?
I know. When I was looking through the emails, I couldn't believe how long we've been going back and forth to set it up. But thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to be here, Tom.
Well, thank you for your patience and persistence, too, because, like I said, we had a fundraiser that kind of intervened in that one and got us to reschedule. But I'm so glad we could all be together right here. Well, Brenda, let me get up with you first, since you got the ball rolling here with Lee's Place. And it was a personal loss that really precipitated this for you, wasn't it?
That's correct. I had a son, Lee, who died of bone cancer back in 1996. And I was already a therapist. But 5 or 6 years after he had died, I knew I could do this work of grief with other people. I couldn't find in the community a place who really specialized in this. So I started Lee's Place and named it in memory of him. But it's not about me. It's about grief and loss and trauma of the community. That's what I noticed was missing in the community. And so I gathered around me a wonderful staff of licensed therapists, and that's what we do. We provide therapy to people every day who really have a tragedy in their lives.
Let me start off here with Karen, if we could. The difference between, oh gosh, you know, mom died and I'm sad and I feel that loss, mm-hmm. and it's persistent and still painful after all these years, but it doesn't really dominate my mm-hmm. life. It doesn't mm-hmm. consume every waking moment. Do you guys step in when it does consume everything and you just can't function.
Right, right. It really is about the ability to function, whether it's getting up and, you know, being a mom or a dad, going to work, managing the daily chores of living. And when it gets to that place where any or all of those things are virtually impossible is when people often come in to talk and get some additional help with their grief. But the same – but with children, it's a little bit different because many times parents and teachers are concerned because the children are either responding in some way that's concerning or maybe they're not responding in some way that they might expect. And so children come in from a different door than maybe the adults do.
And what are some of those warning signs then, since that – a lot of kids will talk your ear off, but a lot of times they won't.
Sure. That's true. A lot of times they won't. But, you know, with – I kind of have to break it down in different age groups. With a teen or a preteen, you might have some different behaviors than you might with younger children. So with the teens, you might see some risk-taking behaviors, you know, whether that's alcohol or drug experimentation, you know, not abiding with curfew, not spending time with friends like they used to, friends changing, school focus may change. You know, they may have been playing soccer for 10 years. All of a sudden, they don't want to play soccer anymore. They don't want to do this anymore. They don't want to do that anymore. And there's just a real difference in who they are.
Okay. Stacey, if I can throw this on to you when it comes to, though, I mean, kids go through stuff. We all know. And you can be, you know, mom's little angel and you think, oh, boy, I finally did something right. I got a good kid. Then the hormones hit and all, you know, it all goes to hell. I mean,
right.
So how can you tell that this is either a normal part of growing up and maybe, mm-hmm. although concerning, is nothing to get really upset about, or it's something deeper?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And in fact, I'll often do, well, all of us do consultation with parents who come in with that exact question and say, mm-hmm. my child's dad died 3 years ago and now this is going on and I don't know if it's related or not. And so, you know, we would do a lot of what Karen was just talking about, kind of assessing the differences in the children. I often ask the parents kind of what their gut feeling is, because the parents are going to know, this feels like my kid is just, you know, hormonal, or this feels like something's really going on. And I think the parents' kind of gut feeling can be a huge indicator. But either way, there are things that we can help them with at Lee's Place, which is helping work out their feelings. Even if they're hormonal or not, there's still something stirring for the child. And so, you know, that's where the therapy with the child, a safe place where they can complain about mom, complain about dad, you know, all the things that are stressing them. So really, it can be helpful either way, I mm-hmm. think.
One thing that, Dr. Brenda, you did, of course, was to channel your personal grief when your son Lee passed away into founding Lee's Place in his memory and putting together a community resource. But for you personally, how else did you handle that besides that channeling?
Well, I didn't do it well, I must say. I was part of it was my circumstance, which was I was home alone a lot. And I shut people out. And I knew that was a problem, but I couldn't do anything about it at the time. So I've learned from some of my mistakes, or I just didn't know. Right? How do you know how to go through this? And that's a lot what I hear from all my clients. I see adult clients, and they don't know how to live through it. They often say that. They often will do some of the things I did, but sometimes they do the opposite. But that isolation from the help that you need is real typical of when there's something that's kind of so big you can't wrap your mind around it, you can't move through it. So those are some of my experiences that I do see in adults. And they, you know, the most common thing adults say to me when they come in is, first of all, I don't think I can live through this. And the second thing is I think I'm going crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I think I'm going crazy. And so a lot of what I help them do is let them know that this is normal, believe it or not, it really does hurt this bad. Mm-hmm. And there's a relief in that for them.
Because the sitting on it, the repression, the look, I can get through this. I grit my teeth and I go on and either, like you did, kind of put yourself out of commission.
Right.
Or you overcompensate and do something else or, you know, go the substance abuse route or anything else.
Yeah, you can do that or the workaholic thing. You can, you know, distract yourself where you never really do the work of grief. There is work, which means you have to, I call it go there. You have to kind of sit down in your puddle and really feel it and cry and miss them and do all of that. And then you've got to kind of put on your face and go to work and do some other things. And that helps you move.
We just are not good at handling this.
No.
Karen Woodard, you know, or Claw Lockhart, you know that for sure. I mean, dealing with younger people and all that, that still this gritting of the teeth, mm-hmm. and we are going to bull our way through this because we're strong.
Right.
We be manly men or womanly women. Why do you think that is? There are a lot of other cultures handle us a lot better than we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that part of what we do in our culture is that we have a lot of attention that comes forth initially. You know, there's a lot of rallying of friends and family and food and attention. And then that goes away after a couple of weeks. And that's when people really begin to feel the cratering of the emotions because they are alone and people have gone on with their lives. And so we've lost so many of those kind of rituals around mourning and grief that I think kind of help us to honor the person that's grieving and to recognize it. And so there's some loneliness in it. There's some loneliness. And I think that children and teens often feel that loneliness because their friends are, you know, they're at Skate World and they're playing, you know, baseball and they're going to the FSU football game. Their life, they're like, they have totally moved on. And the child or the teen is feeling like, but, you know, that's not meaningful to me anymore. Without my sister, without my mom, it's just none of those things are meaningful anymore. So what do I do? Where do I go?
And you go back to your friends because you are feeling a little bit down. It's sort of like, oh, man, are you still on that?
Right.
What is wrong with you? So, talking about personal grief, do you have an experience, loss of a loved one or something else that was important to you in your life? And you want to talk about that. We have folks from Lee's Place here on Perspectives Today, 414-1234, 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Lee's Place out on the shores of lovely Lake Ellis since 2000, helping folks handle loss in their life and the reaction thereof, the many forms of grief that these sorts of things can take in our lives, and total staff of great folks here to help people get around that. Well, let's continue this conversation, Stacy Stoddard, when it comes to the reaction of people, regardless of the source of your grief, and you just want to talk to somebody. And initially, they may be very supportive, but after a while, you just become a real pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm. People either get tired of hearing about your grief or they get so uncomfortable themselves because they don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, bouncing off what Karen just said, that's a huge kind of thing in our culture. I think no one teaches people what to say to someone who is grieving or going through a loss of any kind. And so you'll hear a lot of kind of platitudes, or you'll hear a lot of people just not saying anything at all. So then for a teenager, they've lost, you know, a parent, and now they've also lost their best friend because their best friend has no idea what to say. So the best friend just stays quiet, and now there's additional losses.
Okay, for folks in the non-therapist community, what do we say? What how should we react to this stuff?
I'm sorry is a really nice, gentle, easy thing to say. I like to say better what not to say, which is,
time will heal.
Time will heal. God has a plan, which may feel very true to someone's belief system, but it's not always helpful in that moment to that person. Mm-hmm. What are some other ones?
You can
have another baby.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For people who have a stillborn or a miscarriage.
At least you have another child.
At least you have. Mm-hmm.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Or you think you have problems. Right. Let me tell you about my loss.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And then there's the one that a lot of people talk about feeling offended about, which is, I know just how you feel.
Mm-hmm. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. How could you possibly know what I'm going through
exactly.
right now? Yeah, that isn't exactly the reaction you'd like to get. You know?
And it's hard for people who really want their friends to be there or their other family members, and they can't show up in the way that they need them to. So it's extra isolating and extra difficult. And, you know, one thing I try to help people understand is people aren't responding to you in the way that you want because they're evil, horrible people. They're not responding because they don't know how. Mm-hmm. They have hit their limitations. They are uncomfortable. They don't know how to maintain a friendship with a friend who has lost their mother. But the whole thing together can be especially crippling then to the person who's grieving.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Brenda Robley, since you had some connection with isolation in your own personal grief, does it help to say, oh, come on, let's get you out of here. Let's go take a walk.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. To have that friend who just kind of won't give up, that just keeps coming over, keeps inviting you out to dinner, even though you've said no for 15 times in a row, you know, that person who will talk about the person who died in your life, who'll say their name. That's a big thing, is the name of the person is not said after a certain time. After a year, then the name gets lost. But to say, I remember when Joey, whoever died, did this or did that, or Mary Sue made the best pies, to just mention their name and something about them is so helpful to the grieving person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
It's very heartful.
Yeah, and to hear. The happy memories especially.
Yes. Yeah, I miss her smile so much. I remember when she did this. To kind of, I remember when is kind of a good starter. Mm-hmm. For friends of the one who lost someone.
Okay. I hate to go personal, but I now feel personally vindicated. Because when my dad died, my son and I did a tag team of the eulogy at the church.
Yeah.
And my son, who was incredibly torn up because that really was more his dad than his granddad, broke down, and it was just heart-rending. Mm-hmm. But he powered through this, talking about what that relationship had meant to him. And I went in a totally different direction. I talked about the crazy stuff my dad had done and the happy memories that he had brought, not only myself, but other people. And, I mean, I didn't want it to really become a stand-up routine, but it almost kind of did.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, from that really heavy stuff to kind of a lighter.
Perfect.
And at one time I thought, God, that was horribly inappropriate. It was like I was marginalizing my son's grief, which I didn't want to do. But I remembered what a crazy guy my dad was.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, laughter, that platitude works. Laughter's the best medicine. Mm-hmm. And it really is. Mm-hmm. It really is. A lot of release can happen in laughter as well as tears.
Okay. Well, let's talk. We've been really focusing on the death of someone who's close to us, a loved one. What other kinds of grief can we have that you guys do? Karen, what?
I think divorce is one of the more common reasons why folks come to Lee's Place, either parents who are divorcing and are concerned about how their children are going to handle this, or else even the adults themselves who are struggling with the divorce. And so divorce is a very common reason for folks to come. But there's another type of loss that is kind of in the land of trauma, whether that is being a victim of a crime or a natural disaster or
Sexual abuse
is a
trauma of any kind.
Mm-hmm. And trauma is an enormous loss that is one of the more ambiguous losses that we actually see among many of our clients, even if that's not what walked in the door. That's not what got them in the door. That is a piece of their ability to manage and to cope, and their understanding of what has currently happened is through often the lens of what had happened previously.
Well, you guys are right across the street, of course, from Post 13 American Legion, and I'm thinking of some folks I know who have come back from multiple deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan and that kind of thing, and they are having trouble dealing with that. Stacey, is that another appropriate venue for you guys to attack?
Absolutely, absolutely. And kind of the framework of loss for that is when they come back, they have lost the family as they knew it when they left. Because they have changed, their family has changed, and there's all kinds of transitions to be made. And so that's another way to think about what we do at Lee's Place is just kind of transitions in general. Because all transitions, even if it's a transition to something good, you know, like motherhood, somebody has a child, and that's a great transition, but they're also leaving behind a life of not motherhood, which can be, you know, a life of sleeping in and a life of going out more, whatever it is. And so any of those transitions are appropriate things to bring into Lee's Place.
Okay. Well, and Beth, I don't want to leave you out of the conversation here because there are probably some folks who went, okay, Lee's Place, I think I've heard of it. That's totally supported by the city and the county. I don't think that's the case, though.
Oh, that is not the case at all. And thank you for bringing that up. We are completely supported by donations and grants, individual donations and business donations from our community and the surrounding communities is our number one source of revenue. And then we're writing grants. We're doing fundraisers. We have a fundraiser in the fall called Dovetails. That's our storytelling event. And it's going to sell out this year, so you guys be sure and get your tickets early. But, we don't get any funding from the government, from the city or the county. We do rely on individuals and businesses.
And people may be under the impression that, you know, with any kind of professional service, you know, that there's, you know, some kind of onerous fee schedule that you guys have for what you
absolutely
do.
Absolutely not. That was one of the things that was most important to Brenda when she founded Lee's Place was to make sure that anyone could get the help they needed regardless of their financial circumstances. So we do everything on a sliding fee scale that starts at $20 and goes up. And it's based on what your family is living on and how many people are in your family living on that amount of money.
As low as $20. That is way, way outside the realm of reality when it comes to professional therapy now.
Right. Most private therapists charge at least $100 a session.
Yeah. Why was that so important to you, Brenda?
Because when a tragedy happens in your life, and you don't know where to turn. I wanted Lee's Place to be a place where they could come comfortably and easily to do that. All of our first sessions are free. And we do that because, you know, kind of a general consensus still out in the world, the culture is therapy's for crazy people. And so if you've had a tragedy in your life and you don't know why you can't go to work anymore, or why you can't get up anymore, or why you're so irritated all the time or angry or you can't figure it out, so they can come to Lee's Place, and I call it chit-chatting. We'll chit-chat during our first session. I make it very non-threatening, and it's free. And they always come back. They always come back because we are a very non-threatening place. And the other component to that, making it comfortable for everybody, is Lee's Place is a beautiful place. And it's peaceful every day. We get someone who walks in the door and goes, this is the most peaceful place. And all of that is on purpose because everybody who walks in the door is hurting. And we know that. And they may think they've never been to therapy before. And so it's a new experience for them. And we want them to feel comfortable.
Oh, that is a great setup then for Karen. What happens in the course of therapy? People will say, what, I just sit and I talk to you guys? How can that help me?
Right.
Right.
Good
well,
question.
It is a good question. Maybe Stacey should answer that one.
Well, I'll actually roll with this one because I just not long ago, I won't be able to quote the statistics, but read a really interesting study about how the personal one-on-one connection where you're really just paying attention to one person changes people's brains. It really does change how our brains fire, you know, the feel-good hormones. I don't know all the technical terms here, but that's how it works. And so there is something biologically that happens in people's bodies that does then help them with all their coping and grieving. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is just how it feels afterwards to have had someone hear you, to have someone not necessarily try to fix you or tell you what to do, but just to hear you is extremely impactful.
Do you have problems, though, with the privacy concern? Because here I am bearing my innermost soul to a stranger.
You know, my experience is that most people pretty quickly settle into how good it feels.
Yeah, they get over that pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Brenda's right in that everything about Lee's Place is comfortable. You walk in, it's comfortable. The outside is comfortable. You get a snack if you're, you know, a kid or an adult if you want a snack. There's water, there's tea, there's sodas, and people just... And when you're hurting so bad, sometimes you don't have the energy to keep up all your normal defenses, kind of. Mm-hmm. And so when you get in that kind of environment, somebody looks at you and says, tell me what's going on. It really helps.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like the old journalistic technique that we sometimes use, whether it's at the Capitol or City Hall, where, you're with a news source and you're not threatening, you're not accusatory or adversarial, you're just talking to them and, how's the kids? And you lure them into a sense
it
of
opens
security
their heart.
And boom.
Yes. No, their heart opens. Yeah. You know, sometimes I will just walk in my therapy room, close the door, and they'll just start crying.
Yeah.
I've never seen this person before. And it's just there's something about being heard, being acknowledged. This is about me because we can't fix this, right? There's no problem to solve here when you've lost your spouse or your child or anybody. There's nothing to fix. It's about opening that heart and just letting it through. Emotions are meant to be felt and let go. And when a tragedy happens, we freeze. And there is, and we literally have it in our body and in our brains. Mm-hmm. And we've learned more and more about that with our trauma, with all the trauma research that has gone on in the last 20 years. It's been amazing about how we literally freeze. And so part of it, I call it thawing out, that you have to thaw out little by little by little.
Is this why crying is so important?
Crying is so important. Absolutely. Some people will say, I can't quit crying. I've been crying off and on for 3 weeks. And I said, well, when you've been crying for 3 years, then we'll talk about that as if that's a problem. It's a release. Mm-hmm. You can't cry if you don't have anything to release.
And is it healthy if even 20 years down the road, something, a sight, a sound, something
Absolutely.
Triggers and, boy, you just blubber away
Absolutely.
And you think, my God, here I am. I'm, I've lost it. I'm a weakling.
But it doesn't mean you've gone backwards. It doesn't mean – it just is still there. It's so life-changing, some of these – tragedies that people go through. Suicide is one that is just ongoing, ongoing, all the unanswered questions and the whys, and it just kind of lives in you. And 20 years from now, there'll be a day where you just sit on the floor and you cry till you can't breathe. And that's normal.
And that's good.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
And I want to say that all the research and what the therapists are saying about just being heard, those are all very important, but they're all being very humble because they are very good at what they do. And the reason that people come back and we are so successful in helping them is because of them. They know those questions to ask. They know to say, this is normal, or, expect that this is going to come. So the fact that they're all licensed therapists and so trained and they know the right questions and the right responses is what makes it so helpful to people when they come for whatever their loss is.
How do you uncouple grief and guilt?
Sometimes you don't. Sometimes they're intertwined. And, I don't think that any of us has an agenda of removing guilt, but it is exploring the guilt that can sometimes be so helpful for children, for teens, and for adults. I tend to focus on children because I do have children largely on my caseload, and they're my heart and soul. So children can sometimes feel guilty because they don't have the entire picture explained to them. And being these little egocentric creatures, they will fill in the gaps of something that has happened, and it becomes something that they have interpreted as that they have somehow done or not done that has contributed to someone's death.
Can you give an example of the spider or the beach?
Let me give you an example that I use frequently when I talk. Is I worked with a young child who was around 9 or 10 when I first saw him, and his mother had actually died of breast cancer. And consequently, in exploring his grief and his understanding of the events, he didn't understand how cancer could have occurred. And so he decided that it was from a germ that she had actually gotten by way of being at the beach. Mm-hmm. And
he wanted to go to the beach.
Right. And so because he wanted to go to the beach, because that was his request of her that she take him to the beach, therefore I'm responsible that she got this germ that resulted in the breast cancer and resulted in death. And so that is just the perfect kind of example of how children fill in the gaps of information that trying to understand, you know, a tragedy such as a death of a parent.
You know, and that's one of the reasons why Karen and Stacy are so good with children, is because you don't know that's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really good at pulling those threads, mm-hmm. so to speak, of figuring out what is feeding that guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to folks from Lee's Place here, if you have a question, a comment, maybe a personal experience you'd like to share, 414-1234, 800-926-8809, perspectives@wfsu.org. We all experience loss and sadness and sometimes severe depression, but there is help, and it's not necessarily contained in a little pill bottle. Lee's Place on Lake Ella, right across Kitty Corner, actually, from the American Legion home, has been helping folks deal with grief and loss and those kinds of traumatic situations now for, oh gosh, going 14 years.
Yes, right? Yes. It's amazing. It's amazing. Karen has been with me since the very beginning. She's mm-hmm. been there too.
Yeah.
So one of the founders, and well, I was fascinated here before the break. By the way, folks, again, to share an experience, 414-1234, 800-926-8809, email perspectives@wfsu.org. Karen, you were talking about the young person who felt responsible for mom's breast cancer because he wanted to go to the beach,
right.
And then she contracted it and was convinced that was why,
right.
It was his fault.
Right.
How did you deal with that?
Well, wow. You know, I was able to get kind of a list of questions from this young person about all about cancer, because this was a person who needed some facts. Mm-hmm. You know, he needed information.
Bright.
He
mm-hmm.
was smart, and he needed information about, you know, cancer in general and, you know, treatment. He needed information, and his family was just not able at that time to go there with him. And so we were able to actually, with the help of a board member, get a medical person to come in, and we reviewed all his questions, and she went through all of them and provided as much medical information as she possibly could, because, you know, we don't know everything there is to know about cancers. And I think that was greatly relieving. And having that experience and that expertise as a medical professional, she could really put that to rest, the concern that somehow it was, you know, he was linked to the cause of the cancer.
Oh, gosh. So Lee's Place therapists don't fly solo if they need additional resources there, huh?
Mm-mm. No. In fact, I worked with another client, and because of some misunderstandings about the cause of death, she and I sat down and we wrote a letter to the medical examiner and asked him if he could explain further for us about what had happened because that child had made some vast leaps as to the cause and his responsibility somehow in that cause. And, you know, they just need information. And as parents in there with the best of intentions say, oh, no, that couldn't be. You know, don't worry right. about that, honey. Mm-hmm. That can't be. And that's not enough.
But, you know, adults have the same questions. Mm-hmm. They do. I have adults who need questions about a car wreck, for example. How long were the skid marks? Were the tires bald? Why didn't they turn left here instead of right? They have to know every little single thing, and I help them do that. Sometimes we get autopsy reports. I've gotten pictures from the police that help them with that. Sometimes you just need that. Some people mm-hmm. need that extra information. There are other people who don't want to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of people who don't want to know.
Boy, Stacey Stoddard, if you could quote like a situation that had a really, really good resolution that kind of sticks out in your brain.
Oh, boy. Well, I like
pick
to,
one.
I hope to think there are lots of those people who come and go from Lee's Place that feel a lot better. I'm going to sidetrack for a minute, though, because what I was thinking as we were talking about people who get answers, I was thinking about the situations where answers are not knowable, particularly some children of divorce where, there are a lot of things that contribute to a divorce are kind of adult problems that some children shouldn't know or are not able to really understand if there have been affairs or if it has been, you know, kind of abusive behind the scenes or something you don't want to explain to your child. This is exactly why we're getting a divorce or getting divorced. Daddy slept with another woman. Like, you don't want to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And so working with those children can be a little challenging, too, just to be able to help them when you can't give them answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I was thinking the opposite of a good story. But
yeah, but what a challenge for a therapist, though, to – because how do you mm-hmm. kind of come up with a rationalization for something that there is no rational thing behind as far as the mm-hmm. child is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I think the important part there is to help them I guess I'm thinking of one child that I worked with in particular where the divorce was very, very, very ugly. There was a lot of – it was just a lot of back and forth, a lot of accusations between mom and dad back and forth. And a lot of how we worked was, I think done craftfully to be able to teach in that moment, how do you live with things that you can't know the answer to? He knew stuff was going on. He knew there were things he would not get answers to. And so we had to learn how to manage feelings without having answers and work a lot with what that meant, how he felt about his parents because of that. And so it gets it gets complicated. But the end result for this little boy is I think he felt much more settled. This is the good news. He started being able to reconnect with his friends, put his energy back into his activities, which is where, as a child, his energy should be. So we were able to settle it enough where it wasn't consuming him and keeping him from functioning as a 10-year-old little boy.
Yeah, and a good lesson for us grown-ups, too. Do not, under any circumstances that we can control, bring grief into someone else's life, mm-hmm. either deliberately or inadvertently. Because
mm-hmm.
we see that so often where we become self-consumed and we don't realize how what we're doing and what we're saying impacts somebody else.
Exactly.
Well, it's so powerful. Disempowering to anyone, but particularly a child, when their world is going out of control and they have no way to control it. Mm-hmm. And Stacy and Karen help them learn to kind of go back into their child world, and that is where their power is, so mm-hmm. to speak. That's their job. I hear them say a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to play, to get your math homework done, and that's kind of it. That's kind of it.
Yep.
Your job isn't to make amends between mom and dad or make them feel better.
Mm-hmm. And control the stuff you can't control.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Which is tough for a kid.
Mm-hmm. It's really tough for adults,
tough.
Too.
Well, that's true. One thing we can control, though, is to push line one. That's where Tom is right now, and he has a question for us here on Perspectives. Hey, Tom.
Good morning.
Morning.
enjoying the program. I'd like to ask your panel if they could address the grief and the anguish that parents go through every day dealing with a defiant child or a child that has rejected them.
Wow.
And, it's something that's not like a death, because a death brings closure. And this is something that is repetitive every day.
How is the child, Tom?
Well, this particular child is an adult.
Ah, okay.
But, and that, you know, and an older adult, you know, in their 30s. But also, children, and this child isn't in prison, but parents that have to deal with children in prison or anyone with a loved one in prison every day, because it's not something that goes away. I wake up every day with this type of feeling. And, you know, it's an ongoing thing, and it's not something that happens and it's over. It just happens every day.
Sure.
So I just like to ask them to address that.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. Folks, what do you think?
Well, that's a powerless feeling right there, because the child is an adult and there's only so much you can do. You can only do you. You can't change your adult child. And it's very heartbreaking. So there's not much to do but to learn to be at peace, to learn ways to find peace with allowing, if you will, that child to do whatever that child does, a 30-year-old child to do whatever he or she does. And my job as the parent is I just love them. I just have to love them through it. I just love them. That's my job. It doesn't mean I allow them to abuse me. It doesn't mean I give them enough money to where I don't have enough money anymore. It's not that. It is I'm going to be supportive in as much as I can, not needing them to behave in a certain way.
And how do you build up that wall, though? Again, the guilt here, because kids are really good, whether they're, you know, 3 or 30, at laying the guilt trip on the parents.
I mean, I would want to, you know, Tom, if you were my client, I would probably want to work on kind of what are your stuck points to keep you from being able to love in the way that Brenda just talked about? Because my guess is there's a lot of history of, you know, hurtful things that your child has, you know, done or said or treated you. And so I would just, you know, I would, you know, like Brenda just said, work on yourself to be able to recognize that you cannot change your child, and see what is your grief that you need to work through from all the hurts that have been caused from this relationship, because I totally get that they can be enormous. And so that's where I think the work would be.
Mm-hmm. And letting go of that past because of that history, that seems to be what a lot of this stuff is based on.
Well, yeah, really acknowledging the history that your history and all of these past resentments and hurts and all of this come into the current relationship. And so, I think that would require looking back at some of that so that you can have peace in the present with the relationship as it is.
And to cut it away from the if only, coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Right.
For sure. Right.
And it may be really important to talk about the loss and the pain and the sorrow of not having that child that you'd hoped for. You know, not having the child that was independent and self-sufficient and, you know, was able to kind of follow the path that you had envisioned. And there's hurt in that. And when you don't have that child that has become the person that you'd hoped and dreamt of.
The hurts and the loss we've been talking about so far this morning, though, have been, I guess, understandable to most folks, be it the death of a loved one. As Tom said, the loss of an adult child, either emotionally or physically, you know, if they're in prison or whatever, or the loss of a career that you had built your life around and suddenly it's gone. Retirees, Mm-hmm. I remember, oh my gosh, when I was working for the telephone company, one of my responsibilities was putting together little retirement parties. And that was in the day when you would have people who had careers that spanned 35, 40, 45 years at one place. And I remember so vividly, this was an operator back when we had operators in Tallahassee. And she, after 48 years, I think she was 16 when she came on board. Mm-hmm. This had been her job, but not just her job, all of her social connections, mm-hmm. all of her friends, and they were right. they were family.
Right.
And it was a gala party, and people came from all over the place. Hundreds of people were there, and it was wonderful, and she's smiling and all, and suddenly it was like someone had ripped her face mm-hmm. open. The realization struck her that tomorrow morning her life was over. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. It was just heartrending.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, that doesn't happen so often anymore, where we start a job when we're 16 and we're there and our whole world is built around that.
Yeah, but I've done something for 6 months and finally my life's work, I feel like I've made a connection and suddenly the boss comes in and says, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you handle
and,
that?
Well, and all kinds of other losses too. Like I worked with a woman once who had a degenerative eye disease. Mm-hmm. And so as she lost her mm-hmm. eyesight, she lost her job. She lost her ability to get herself around the city. She lost the ability to go out and buy her own toothpaste. And then she started losing relationships because other people had to come to her. She started losing her health insurance. Like any number of things trickle from a medical condition. So lots of loss.
Yeah, well, even just normal aging. You know, when you
right.
physically can't do stuff or, you know, you're a little dementia kicks in and you can't remember. Do you guys handle that, those sorts of
absolutely.
Things?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We do.
And spouses of people who have Alzheimer's or dementia, that's a huge loss that they're mm-hmm. coping with. While the person is still living, but they don't recognize them, they're no longer. Many times it's the man has Alzheimer's and the wife has never paid the bills, doesn't know any of what's happening in their finances.
Very scary. It's kind of the caretaking. Mm-hmm. I see most of those people, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the caretaking is extremely difficult and very stressful. And there's a lot of depression that goes on with that because they're so overwhelmed because the demise, if you will, is gradual mm-hmm. often. And so then something new happens over and over and over, and they have to readjust. Today he can't walk. Tomorrow he's not speaking. Tomorrow, you know, it just keeps going on, and it's panic time. Mm-hmm.
Because chronic depression is almost, I guess, the diagnosis du jour now, and there is so much medicine that's floating around it. Does that complicate your lives between the people who maybe should be, I guess, dealing with a hurt, a profound hurt, instead of kind of plastering it over? I'm not saying anything bad about our friends in the medical profession.
Tom, that is such a good point, and mm-hmm. I talk about it all the time mm-hmm. in my therapy sessions, the difference between sadness and depression. Mm-hmm. Even when your dog dies, you know, I shouldn't even say even, but when there is something that happens, there's a sadness associated with that event. And it can turn into depression. It can. And it's a subtle difference. Sadness and depression can look the same. But depression is always the same. You're always blue, if you will. And in sadness, there are times I always ask them, can you truly laugh when your friends come over to your house and, you know, you're out to dinner, and can you really feel that laugh? And usually, if they can, that's sadness. Does that make sense to you? Am I explaining that well?
Yeah, it
if
sounds like
depressed, it's almost a fake laugh. They'll laugh, but they feel it like it's pushed.
But you have an emotional baseline that is flatlined.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. It never goes up and down. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Right. So the medication can help reset the baseline, but then therapy can help with the regular ups and downs and that sort of thing?
I would say that what's important, I think, with medication, with depression, is that it is goes hand in hand with therapy, because while it may help lift the mood, there's still coping skills to learn. There's still grief to be expressed. There's still the emotional work to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the medication just lifts the energy level enough that you can actually do that work, because otherwise there's not even the energy to do the work that they can articulate that they want to do but can't quite do.
Gosh, we could work on this all day. Mm-hmm. Folks from Lee's Place, Beth Teddio, Stacy Stoddard, Karen Lockhart, and Dr. Brenda Rabelais, the founder of Lee's Place. Thank you all for coming.
Thank
I learned
you
so much today.
Thank you.
Really thank you very much.
Tom,
we enjoyed
thank
it.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox on the board today. Lydell Rawls keeping up with the phone and cyberspace stuff. I'm Tom Flanagan. Hope you can join us for next week's Perspectives. Our guest for the whole hour, one of the world's most respected naturalists, Tallahassee's own Bruce Means. Join you then.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.